Yes, it's the Friday Night Frolic now. Open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Lots to talk with you about. My gosh, what a couple months it has been. But as many of you know, I am here in St. Louis for the holidays before heading back to Los Angeles. And today, and you talk about weather, cold, wet rain that just never stopped. It was unbelievable. It was about like 40 degrees. Had it been any colder, it would have been one horrible snowfall. Just unbelievable. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a white Christmas out here. You never know. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. We'll get ready for your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Hey, by the way, I'm thinking of relaxing a rule that we've had on the program for a long, long time. And it's the 30-day call rule. You know what that is. That is, so if you get in a month ago, you're eligible to call in again to get on the program a month later, right? Some people have gotten through because, you know, you can't remember every name all the time. But I don't know. I've been toying with the idea of, you know, just doing away with it altogether. And it's hard enough for people to get through on the lines in the first place. So if those people are lucky enough to get through, so be it. But anyways, I'm kicking that around. You might want to let me know what you think about that in an email, if you would. george@coasttocoastam.com. The 30-day rule, should I do away with it or not for phone calls on open lines? Anyways, we've got open lines for you for the next couple hours here. And let me give you a little program schedule again. Those of you who have not heard it yet, I will be live on Christmas Eve and on Christmas night. I will be live on New Year's Eve and New Year's night as well. All live programs for you. If you are in a city that sometimes they decide that on Christmas Eve they're going to run Christmas music all the time, give them a call. We send out notices to program directors to let them know, because once they realize, oh my gosh, there's a live program and he does it every year, that's what we want to carry. And that's what the audience wants. But it might be, you know, behoove you to call your program director or your station in the morning and say, look, I understand Coast to Coast is going to be live on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night, and same with New Year's. Christmas is the one that a lot of stations will just run Christmas music. You don't have to worry about the New Year's Eve moments, but give them a call. Just let them know that. But they will be getting notices from us as well. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Open lines for you now all night long. Kevin in New York, you're up with us. Hey, Kev, what's up?
Hello, George. It's good to hear you on
you too.
On Asian Aliens when I get to see you. And I miss Riley Martin on your show, too.
I have fun on that.
Yes, I wanted to just talk about the tobacco situation. You know, I see all these terrible commercials on TV about cigarettes and how terrible it is and how they try to scare people out of their minds about smoking. Yet, the tobacco is still allowed to be harvested in our fields, and nobody goes after that like they do drugs. Is that the ATF behind it? Philip Morris behind it? How is tobacco still allowed to be harvested in our fields? How come it has not been made illegal?
And taxes. There's too much money, Kevin, with tobacco, and it'll go on forever. Now, some retailers and pharmaceutical companies, like the drugstore, CVS, they've gone, you know, tobacco free. They're, you know, and they claim that they were doing, you know, $1 billion a year with selling tobacco products. And they have decided to take a stand. Nope, not going to do it. I have never smoked cigarettes in my life. Growing up, my dad never smoked cigarettes. My mother smoked a little bit for a little time, then she stopped. And I just have never smoked cigarettes. So it's difficult for me to talk about what it's like to not be a smoker, to be a smoker. And what those smokers go through, but I'm going to tell you, there's too much money in tobacco and selling it in taxation. It will not go away. I would bet my bottom dollar that tobacco products will stick around for a long, long time. Too much taxation money, way too much. First time caller Brian in Pennsylvania, you're up with us, Brian. Welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Norrie. How are
Hello.
You?
I'm fine, Brian. How about yourself, sir?
I am doing well, thank you. Calling in to answer your question about the cause of all these law enforcement issues where these tragedies are occurring in this country. I've been a police officer, military, and civilian for 30 years now, so I've seen things change.
You sure have.
And I can sum it up in one word: litigation. The lawyers are running the entire show, and the fear of litigation is running the police services in this country.
Well, I think you're right, but let me ask you this. Let's look at a couple police episodes, Brian, that have occurred over the last several months, and I just want your take on it.
Sure.
First and foremost, let me ask you about the situation that occurred in July in New York, where the police officer choked the 43-year-old man who was selling cigarettes, speaking of cigarettes, selling loose cigarettes on the streets of New York.
Which in New York is illegal.
Which I know, but cigarettes.
The city generates a large amount of revenue from taxes on cigarettes. The police officer wasn't walking down the street and said, "Oh, look, there's a major crime in effect. That guy's selling loose cigarettes." He was told from the chain of command down, from the mayor down, that they need to stop the independent sales of cigarettes because it's cutting into their tax revenue.
Well, let me ask you about that, first of all. Because weren't those cigarettes, hold on for a sec, weren't those cigarettes purchased with taxation money in the first place?
Sure, but the users who are taking the loosies aren't going out and buying a pack. They're buying the loosies from an independent contractor, and it's cutting down on their tax revenue. And the politicians, not the police, make the laws. And the police at the street level are told, go out there and arrest those people. Now, once you make contact with a person and you say, look, you're doing something illegal, I have to arrest you, you have now committed it to an action that you can't take back. He's committed a crime. You say, I have to take you into custody. If their rules are when you take someone into custody, you have to handcuff them, then this guy had to make an attempt to handcuff this gentleman who refused to be handcuffed.
Right.
That cop didn't wake up that morning and say, I'm going to go out there and catch some cigarette sellers. He probably walked into a roll call and was told, you need to go out and get these guys. Okay? And when it comes down to it, once the officer makes the commitment to arrest, if the person is not compliant, then they have to use a reasonable amount of force. And that's what happened. And it's tragic. But it can happen for any type of arrest, from cigarettes to some thug trying to grab your gun.
The timing, unfortunately, is horrible. And I know it's horrible, but this
is also politically driven. Okay, there's something going on that the government at certain levels wants a race problem. Most cops are colorblind. A jerk is a jerk. A criminal is a criminal. A citizen is a citizen. Most of us love our profession, and we love the people we protect. But they're trying to turn this into some sort of thing that we're the bad guys. We don't make the laws. We just enforce them. But we also have to deal with the fact that we can get sued for doing our jobs.
Yes.
Our bosses are scared that they're going to be sued not only from outside the department, but inside the department. You talk about the militarization of the police. The reason why we have to have all this equipment now is because places like Columbine, they weren't prepared to deal with people with bombs, with semi-automatic weapons, or high-powered weapons, like in the L.A. Bank robbery. They were out there with pistols, and these guys were out there with fully automatic AK-47s.
Aren't you amazed as a police officer that we haven't had as much hand grenade tossings and assault weapons as we should We've been really fortunate.
I'm retired Air Force, and I served in Somalia and Haiti, where there were a lot of weapons floating around. And yes, I am surprised that we haven't had more of this. But I think it goes to the fact that a lot of people in America primarily a large portion of this country, are really good people who want to obey the law.
No doubt about it. See, my contention is why do these people who have been approached by the police for a number of things they've done, why don't they willingly just listen to the cop and do what they say? Why do they have to struggle and fight?
There's a cultural problem in this country where certain segments of the population are taught that the police are the enemy, that we are singling people out. And then, most people don't have any contact with the police. That might have been the first time. Well, it wasn't. It was a guy in New York City, but the young man out in
Ferguson.
Ferguson. That might have been the first time a cop ever contacted him for walking down the middle of the street.
Yeah,
he might have been ignored doing that before and thought it was perfectly all right.
Do you think the cop should have left him alone?
His concept from rap, from music, from television, is that the man is going to hassle you. And we're not out to hassle people. We don't wake up. I know not one police officer that I've met in 30 years that wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to go out and bother people today.
Or shoot someone.
Or shoot. Oh, gosh. Gosh forbid. But then again, George, you talk about the young kid with the gun. Now, that whole thing with the 12-year-old.
That was a tragedy.
Horrible tragedy. But if you look at the training of the police officer who was involved, and I don't Monday morning quarterback anybody, because it happens to me on a lot of police cases. I get Monday morning quarterback to death by our administrators who are part of the lawyer and litigation fear squad. I'm not going to money more quarterback the thing, but we're also trained now that people change the appearance of real weapons to look fake, and fake weapons to look real.
I know. It's unbelievable situation you're in.
If I'm out on the street and somebody comes up and points a gun at me and it's got an orange tip, I'm going to hesitate. So you think, oh, my God, it's a toy. Well, if that criminal is smart enough,
he'll put an orange tip on his gun.
Spray paint, and put a strip on it. Yes, yeah, absolutely. We face this every day. And we're talking decisions that have to be made in seconds. Now, the whole thing out there with that poor 12-year-old, I think there was a deeper cause to that. And I guess looking at that officer's credentials and him leaving another department under a cloud.
Yeah.
But then again, it falls on the city that they have to hire people who they can train and qualify.
But he's told in this 911 call there's a person brandishing a gun, and then you realize that he's a little 12-year-old, but the kid's still holding it, pointing it. It's an unfortunately sad situation.
Okay. Unfortunately it is. But I just wanted to let you know that a lot of this root cause of militarization of the police, of level of force being used for seemingly small crimes, it all stems from the lawyers and the litigious problem that America has.
Well, that doesn't. Let me ask you one last question, if I can, Brian.
Okay,
are cops uptight nowadays?
I think most of us think the situation is ridiculous. I'm more uptight as an American citizen that our government is having people like Al Sharpton advise the president on matters that the attorney general should be advising him on. Al Sharpton, I lived in Fishkill, New York, or near Fishkill, New York, and I went through the Tawana Brawley case. Al Sharpton is a liar and a race baiter.
I think Al, look, I got to move on, but I think Al Sharpton has been part of the problem here in Ferguson by flaming and fueling the flames. I really do. Brian, thanks for your expertise. I really appreciate it. And let's move on to a couple more calls before we're already at the bottom of the hour. Jeff in Culver City, California. Jeffrey,
yeah,
take
hey,
it away.
Dude, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
I can't believe that that police officer justifies selling loose cigarettes for 50 cents as a crime and worthy of the death penalty. This is just pure insanity, George. But I want to ask you this question. With this, this quest for who killed Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, I mean, it seems like ever since President Obama's been president, I've heard Kennedy's name mentioned hundreds of times. And on your program, I once mentioned the unmentionable possible involvement, you know, with Kennedy's and policies in the Middle East and Israel, and the host Richard Serrett and his guests virtually accused me of being anti-Semitic for even bringing the subject up. I mean, you know, I can't get, I don't understand it, George. What's with this quest for Kennedy and, injustice when the man's been gone like for 50-something years and, you know, and nobody wants to bring up, you know, what happened in the Middle East and those policies? You know, one guest of yours named James Genio tried to bring it up, and he was cut off. So, I mean, I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either. Look, the bottom line is we're all trying to find the truth. That's what we try to do on this program all the time. In terms of the fascination with Kennedy after all these years, look, we lost a little bit of something a long, long time ago when Kennedy was assassinated. I think we just want to get the answers. Except I think most of us already know. I'm convinced Kennedy was shot with a conspiracy behind it. There's no doubt about it. Pam's in southeastern Wisconsin. Hey, Pamela, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk a little bit about police officers in general. My dad
sure.
was a cop. And basically what he taught me was the Constitution was the most important thing ever. And literally, he said to me when I was a kid, if you do wrong, I'm not backing you up, because his obligation was to the law as a whole and not to me. He loved me, but he taught me that my job was to be a good citizen. And if I chose to, you know, not follow those rules, that was my choice. But he would not back me up because it was just how we live as a good community. And it didn't mean that he didn't love me. It just meant that that's how you live in a good community, because if you don't have some sort of a greater thought of your community, you have nothing. And as far it relates to the fact of all the things that are going on in Ferguson and also in New York, I disagree with the things in New York, but we have a situation in Kenosha County that we had with a young man named Michael Bell who was killed in his own driveway. And the reason I bring it up is because, you know, cops have to make choices, and sometimes they make wrong ones. But the thing of it is, the obligation is for you as a community member to be a good member of the community and to do good things. And we all make bad choices sometimes.
Well, and let me tell you, the bad part about all of this is, you know, as a police officer, you can't be hesitant, because that's going to get you killed, too. We'll be back. Well, I was mentioning that Mark Zakri is also on the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. So many others have volunteered and donated their time and voices and energy for this, for proceeds going to veterans charities as well. You can pick up the CD in time for Christmas by going to coasttocoastam.com. At the highlight reel, you'll see a little picture of the CD cover. You click that, and then click where it says more. It'll take you straight to amazon.com. And you get the information that way, and have a great time doing it. The Coast Style CD. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got open lines here for you. And tonight's the Friday Night Frolic. Whatever's on your mind, check in with us. Let's go to Florida now. John's with us on the wild card line. Hello, John. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
My son's a sheriff up in Tallahassee. Well, actually, it's a small town called Wakulla County. And he's got, I think there's 65 sheriffs in the whole unit. So he goes in these areas that are very dangerous, 5 to 6, maybe 10 minutes backup time for the other guy to back him up if he gets himself in a situation.
Is that good or bad, 5 or 6 minutes? I don't know.
It's bad because if you get in some of these areas where you could be ambushed, like one of his partners or another Tallahassee police officer, two of them showed up for a house that was on fire before the fire trucks got there, and they got ambushed. This is 2 days after the shooting at the University of FSU.
Okay.
So you got a lot of anti-government people in this area. So he, by working in the jail for 4 years, he's pretty much run into the same guys on the street. So they kind of have a liking to him. Hopefully it still continues to where he talks them down, where he can actually take him in and have him go through the process. But he has used his taser, and it actually has not worked a couple of times, to where he had to do low impact, or what do you call it, close impact jet suit type maneuvers on him, to where he can flick pain on him, to where they go down to their knees, he can get a handcuff on him, get him down quickly. And he says, Dad, there's a lot of time I could grab my gun if I got crazy and got feared. But, you know, it's a tough situation for the police.
Oh, it is. It's a thankless situation, too. There's no winning. You can't win here.
Right. And a lot of times he sits in the car, he has high-tech equipment where it takes the picture off your, the symbol on your license. It's in the center. It picks it up, and they can tell if you have a warrant out. Then he sits tight and waits for a backup to come in. But if he's actually got, like, arresting somebody and they struggle with him, then he conflicts pain that he learned to get a control of the person real quick and get him handcuffed right away.
Why do people struggle? Why don't they just say, okay, take me in, I'll call my lawyer, or I'll get a court-appointed attorney, and I'll fight you that way?
Well, if you look at in the south of Tallahassee, there's a wildlife refuge there. There's hundreds of miles of open highway with hardly any lights. So they'll just take off into the woods. They just panic. And sometimes you just have to let them go and just take cover. And just, you know, I don't know how he does it, but he has 10 years out there so far in this particular area.
Does he like doing what he's doing, John?
Yeah, he loves doing what he's doing. He did it all on his own. He went from flipping hamburgers, then went into the jail as a guard, learned the process there, then he went through the proper training. So now they're retraining everything now because it's in the state capital of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best training. So they're retraining everybody, and he will be wearing cameras pretty soon.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for all that feedback. Let's go east of the Rockies now. Marion's with us, Queens, New York. Hi, Marion. Welcome to the program. You're on the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure talking to you, George.
You too.
Listen to you every night. You're the only program that I will stay up these crazy hours for. And I'm a fellow Gemini as well.
Well, perfect. So do you have two personalities?
I think so. I'm always fighting with myself.
Yeah.
It's like I have two people. Do this. No, don't do that. It's strange. The reason I'm calling, I had a strange experience when I was about 8 or 9. I never forgot it. My mother had to make it easy for me to put the light on and off, she put a ribbon on there. And then one night I couldn't sleep, and I started to stare at this ribbon. And it started to go back and forth, back and forth. And then all of a sudden, it stopped abruptly. It curled up, and it came down straight. And I had to hide under the pillow until the next morning. And then it never came back. It never happened again.
That's weird.
Isn't it? I never forgot it, and I'm sure it wasn't a dream.
What do you think happened?
I don't know. You talk about poltergeists. Maybe that's what it was.
Well, it could be. And they never followed you or anything like that afterward?
No, thank God. No, no. And I've always been interested in the paranormal. And but this is something that I never forgot. As I said, I was only 8. And, you know, I never forgot it.
Have you had paranormal experiences after that?
Anything after that I can remember offhand, because I'm kind of nervous now? The only thing that I had once, about 3 years ago, I went out into my backyard taking the dog out, and I happened to look up in the sky, And I couldn't believe what I saw. It looked, Mars was supposed to be very close to the Earth at the time. And I remember it was around 7:30 at night, and it was still wasn't dark yet. It was the sun was still out. Actually, you could see the moon behind it, and it was rust color. I couldn't believe it. I went out and I said, "What in the world is that?" And it was rust color. You could see it so clearly. But I was said, "My God, that I wonder if it was Mars." I never saw anything like it in my life, and I can't believe this was not a dream, because I can never forget that either. And I didn't see anything. I thought, well, gee, it seems so close. I wonder if I could see anything up there, like a UFO. It was a rust color, and it was so fertile. It looked so fertile. And then when I nothing happened, so when I turned around as I was leaving, I noticed that it was smaller. If it was Mars, I thought that would be larger, but it looked kind of small, I thought. Well, I went in. Of course, I didn't see it the next day, but then I heard a program where they said that Mars is only one quarter the size of Earth.
Oh, it looks really small, Marion, and you know, actually, it looks like a little star if you're just looking at it with the naked eye. Let's go to Mike in Livermore, California. Hey, Michael. How are you, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing great, George. I like your little opening there that you're going to allow people to call within 30 days.
I'm thinking of that. What do you think?
Well, being I call Thanksgiving night, I think it's a great idea.
That's right. You did leak through again, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Well, I thought you opened up the door for me. You know, I could actually probably teach a class on how to get on coast to coast.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I was going to say, so many people conspiracy conference that we met up at a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I think the most frequent asked question of me was, how do you get on so often?
How do you get on? And you know, you're not getting any special favoritism. You know
no,
that.
I'm not. I know I'm not. In the beginning, it was all about, I mean, if I got through, and Tommy didn't know me back then, I mean, 11 years ago, 12 years ago, I had a good question. And he'd always say, he goes, oh, that's good. And, you know, that's how you get on. And it's basically, the other thing is, too, is you just got to know when to call.
It's timing. Everything is timing, Michael.
Well, that's it. I mean, every radio station has a different delay to it. The one I'm calling on right now is probably about 10 to 15 seconds. And as soon as I get off, I'll hit my radio, and I'll be on one that's 45 seconds.
And you'll hear yourself.
And I'll hear myself.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to talk about, you know, this whole thing with all the shootings, and I don't want to go into all of that, but the one officer you talked to for a long time there, and he had alluded to pretty much that the administration was race baiting. And I think, you know, with the Edgar Cayce predictions of a civil war, and Ed Daines has always been on that, this may be the start of it in a sense that, you know, this race baiting gets the black community against the police. And you've seen a lot of white protesters in there along with them because of the police brutality of some of these mm-hmm. cases, and that could be the start of the whole thing. And I had heard a guy earlier tonight on the radio, and he had a very, very good point, was these people come out and protest, this is a good thing. And not every one of these incidents have been ideal for the protest of police brutality or escalating the police forces, militarizing them, and all that stuff. But these protests, the one thing they lacked that Martin Luther King had back in the early days was they had an agenda. They had an idea. This is what we're going to go for. It seems like these people are just getting out in the street and being led by whoever beats the loudest.
Well, that's the problem. And let me tell you, protest, Mike, is fine. It's good. You have a right to do that. You don't have a right to loot and to burn buildings down and do things like that. And you know what? The cops in the Ferguson area have video pictures now of a lot of these people who set buildings on fire, and they're going to go after them, and they're going to arrest these folks, and that's a good thing. But peaceful protest, every American has a right to do that, and I think they should. Let's go to Paul in Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Paul, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call, George. This is the best show, bar none. And I'd just like to say real quickly, I want to ask you, I'll make a few comments, and I'll make it real quick. I want to ask you how you think this will all end. And I want to say that my cousin works for the NSA, and yes, there are UFOs, okay? And when a person lies to you all the time, you said, George, we go by logic and reason. So when a person lies to you all the time, what's a logical thing? You're not going to hang around them anymore. So I hope the people wake up, because we're in grave danger. And I want to say two quick stories. I was sleeping, this is about the Demon Show the other night. I was sleeping with my girlfriend about 7-8 years ago, and it was totally dark. I was living the real hard life. And I was just reflecting in the dark. She was asleep next to me, and I'm telling you what, I'm not kidding you what, a voice whispered in my right ear and said, "Step away from the darkness." Ooh. And I bolted up, woke her up. Okay, that's one story. And then I was mowing a lawn one time, my friend's lawn, and I'm mowing out there. I didn't want to be out there. It was a hot, nice day, and so I'm out there mowing, and a voice came to me, and inside, not audible, I saw the life flight helicopter flying, kept flying. A voice came to me and said, "Pray for that person." And I said, "I ain't praying for that person. I don't feel like it. Pray for that person." So I prayed. It turned out that was my cousin's daughter who was just born, and she was, she almost died. She had I don't remember the disease, but she almost died. And I just want to say, one, can I give a shout-out? George?
Sure, of course. One of your friends. Go ahead.
Thank you. I want to give a shout-out to Shahida from Imperium. I'm sorry. And of all my women, you were the only one I would have ever married. And George, you have a great night. Thank you.
All right. You're very, very welcome there. All right. Who's next? Let's go to Fred in Yarmouth, Maine. Welcome to the program. Fred, you're on the air with me. Go ahead, Freddie.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, Fred. Thanks.
Hey, well, I was laying in bed, and I was listening to the show, and the woman who had the ribbon moving in the bedroom.
Yeah.
I had the same experience as a child at my grandmother's house, except it was a chain on a light switch. I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I swear to God, that thing was moving around and all the time.
And magical.
I would look at it. It was just fascinating.
When this happened to you, what did you think was happening?
Well, I grew up in a house that was haunted. So I was kind of used to paranormal things. I just thought it was kind of cool. It was entertaining.
So you weren't scared,
it was,
huh?
It was a little show.
I love it. Yeah, you're not scared at all. Open lines, a Friday night frolic here. By the way, Skype is open. Give it a try at George97313. Let's try out Skype as well. Let's go next to Chad in Sacramento, California. Good morning, Chad. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you.
One of the things, since I guess one of the big topics right now that they're talking about is this situation with the police and rash of situational shootings, but one of the things is that the news is covering a lot of that, and a lot of people are like, well, why are these cops, you know, acting like this? Why are they going to deadly force like that? The problem is that I bet if I was to tell you the name Deputy Danny Oliver or Michael Davis Jr., no one is going to really know who they are, maybe outside of Sacramento.
Right.
There were two police officers who were killed in the line of duty by a individual that literally just gunned them down. There was no confrontation. The first thing was the officer literally was trying to tell the guy he needed to move his car. And as he was walking to the car, guy pulled out a rifle, shot him in the head. Not in the chest, not anywhere else. He shot him in the head.
Just some crazed guy who just lost
it. Crazed guy who, you know, you, just you you want to talk about immigration reform, the guy was deported twice and now was somehow back here. Then another situation happened, same guy, police cornered him, they tried to take him down, and he shot and killed one officer and wounded the other, then carjacked a guy, blew that guy's face off. That guy somehow survived. I don't know how. That's, you know, somebody was watching out for him there, and they were finally able to catch him, but no one ever hears about that. You pull up CNN, no one's ever going to tell you about that. They're going to talk about, I think there was a new shooting, I think either yesterday or today, where another unarmed black individual was shot when he refused, he was going for something in his waistband or something, and they used the exact phrase, unarmed black man shot by cop. The media's race baiting now, it seems.
Yeah, they are. And part of the problem is, listen, this is a huge country, and we have more murders in this country than most war zones have. And so if you heard what was happening, if you were outside the United States, let's say you're in Iraq or Iran, and you heard about the murder fatality rate in the United States caused by shootings and stabbings and things like that, every year you would think that this country was falling apart, because that number is astronomical. So you're going to get a lot of these episodes. This is a big country. And you're going to get police shooting people, and you're going to get other people shooting other people. It happens. I think one of the issues now is because the media and the social networking is so fast. You know, the old days, I mean, way gone back when I was a kid, those days are gone, where you had to rely on your television network or your radio station to only get you the information. Now it's all over the place, and that's fueling some of this as well. Look, we're coming back another hour to go of Open Lines at Coast to Coast AM.